I alone, yet tired. If there truly is nothing beyond my own self, then what am I doing to cause myself so much pain? Phantoms that appear as wild beasts, phantoms that appear as those who have populated my dreams once before. The beasts that tear my flesh as they tear my soul. Yet these people who are my dream companions seek to help me. I know not why, yet feel that if I am to understand why I am dreaming this madness, I must follow them. They are my guides. Perhaps if I follow, they will reveal the purpose of my dream. Maybe they are here to lead me from the madness and back to the real world. If this is a trial from a deity or from some evil genius who seeks to test me for his own end, then I must stay the course. But every step becomes so hard. It is so cold, and yet I feel so hot, as though the very blood that courses through my veins is liquid fire.
They had been marching for hours, thinking of nothing but the task at hand. Christy and Mildred had stayed close to Doc. He remained silent, distant from them. There was little indication that he could even acknowledge their existence. But he was still marching, keeping pace. Something was driving him onward. Mildred frowned as she looked back at him. Was she wrong, or were there red patches flaring over his cheekbones, barely visible against the pallor of his gaunt visage? Was his gait getting a little stiff compared to when she looked back a few minutes before? She dropped back so that she could keep pace beside him.
Doc, can you hear me?
He showed no signs of registering her words. She took his wrist and felt his pulse. He didn't seem to notice her doing this. His pulse was fast. Even allowing for the pace they were setting, it was still a little more than she would expect. She put her hand up to his forehead, half expecting him to brush it away.
Mildred, what's wrong?
Oh, my God.
Mildred withdrew her hand in surprise. Doc's forehead was slick with sweat, his skin burning beneath the veneer of perspiration. This was just what she had feared.
We can't stop now. Look around you. There's no shelter. The cold is starting to bite into me just like it is you, and we need to find food and shelter before the next storm blows up.
So that's a no, then.
I can't see why we can't just rig something to carry, Doc. It won't be the first time. There's no immediate danger.
I'm not saying we can't do that. Just that we need to stop a while. I need to examine him properly, see if his wounds are infected, or if this is something in his blood. I can't give him another shot until I know what's going on with him. It won't take that long, Ryan.
Mildred looked back to where Christy was helping the old man along. His gait was stiffer than before, and he was trembling. There was little doubt that it would only be a matter of half an hour, perhaps not even that, before they had to carry him. But if she waited until that was forced on them, it could make all the difference between treating his fever successfully or not. Ryan kept walking, narrowing his eye to take in the horizon. At the edge there were a few objects that may be croppings or maybe the first signs of a settlement. Maybe another hour's march if they could force the pace. But Ryan felt the ice seep into his marrow, was still tired from lack of sleep and exertion. The only thing keeping him going was sheer will. If he stopped, would he be able to start again? Then he looked back for the first time. Resolutely, he had kept his eyes ahead while they marched, not wanting to turn back to check Doc when Mildred caught up to him. He knew that if he did, he would probably agree with her assessment. That was something he didn't want to do. He wanted to press on for his own sake, as it did when he saw the condition the Doc was now in. The old man had never looked so frail. Ryan didn't even want to consider what the fever was doing to his already fractured mind. Wearily, and with a sense of resignation that he could not hide, he slowed and held up his hand.
Okay. We stop and check Doc. But you'd better make it quick for his sake as much as ours. There isn't much shelter out here, and we can't make much.
I don't need long, believe me.
Mildred hurried back to where Christy had gently lowered Doc onto the cold rock floor of the plane. He was unresponsive, lost in his own world. Needing no direction, Jack and JB joined Ryan in using what they could spare of their own outer clothing to form an improvised barrier against the winds that blew around the prone figure. They had traveled light, and there was nothing across this arid expanse of rock and ice to use as a windbreak. Shedding an outer layer meant exposure to the elements themselves, but it was playing percentages. If Mildred could be as quick as she had said, then they may just avoid overexposure. Working quickly, Mildred was on her knees. Christy pulled away Doc's fur coat, the frock coat beneath, and the tattered remnants of his shirt, the bloodied edges of which had already been trimmed in the cave to allow Mildred access to his wounds. The Titian-haired woman also maneuvered her body so that it formed an extra barrier between the prone Doc and the wind. Mildred knew that she could count in seconds the time she would have to make her examination before Doc's exposed flesh wound would succumb to the elements and before those who had sacrificed their own warmth to provide cover would begin equally to succumb. The area uncovered was around his ribs. The wounds on the arm could be dealt with swiftly and would not need him to be so protected. But the torso was another matter. Christy had contrived to expose as little of the old man as possible, and Mildred had just enough area in which to work. She removed the dressing she had placed earlier and could see that the wounds showed no signs of infection.
That's good.
What, Mildred?
The skin's still healthy. A bit raw, but still healthy.
Fumbling with the cold, she redressed the wound, and Christy dexterously reclothed Doc while Mildred looked up at the man standing over them.
You can get covered again, guys. There's enough slack to just roll up his sleeve.
Thank you, Millie.
While J.B., Ryan, and Jack gratefully replaced their heavy coats and hugged themselves into the materials to try to suck warmth from them, Mildred jacked up the layers of sleeve on Doc's arm, thanking whatever deity she thought may still exist that the old man's wounds had been on the forearm. It saved a whole lot of hassle. Having to strip him to examine the upper arm would have taken precious time and probably finish him off by itself. Removing the dressings and checking the wounds, she could see that these too were clean. Replacing the dressing, her mind raced. No infection visible, so it had to be something that acted quickly in the bloodstream. Why hadn't that antibiotic shot worked? No one else who had needed a shot was feverish. But then, their wounds hadn't been as serious. It had to be that just one of the hypos was a dud. She'd have to try another and cross her fingers.
I'm going to give him another shot and hope it works. Meantime, we're going to have to help him until we can find some shelter, because he won't be strong enough to stand alone until we can get some rest.
No problem. We'll take it in turns. I'll take first.
No, Ryan. You don't look so hot yourself. Let me or John do it.
Ryan looked her in the eye. He could see that she had been studying him as they had marched, and knew that he had his own battle with fatigue. He nodded briefly.
Okay.
Pulling Doc to his feet, Mildred and J.B. supported him between them. Jack took the rear defensive position in line, and Christy dropped in behind Ryan.
15 minutes, then we swap. That way we try to stay fresh.
Yeah, sounds good to me. Doc's a lot heavier than he looks.
They would be slower now, but as Ryan fixed his gaze on the shapes littering the horizon, he felt that they could still make the settlement within a couple of hours, assuming that those shapes were buildings, assuming they could withstand the bone-chilling cold, assuming that no storms blew up from nowhere. Best not to think about it. Best just to concentrate on putting one foot in front of another, on ignoring the stench of sulfur searing their lungs with every breath, the jarring of foot on rock that made the ankles turn to jelly with every step. There was little they could do until they reached shelter, and if the distant shapes didn't represent that shelter, then they would deal with that when they got there.
The phantoms now lift me up like angels. You know, they may be devils of the foulest kind. They support me so that I am as light as air. They take me toward the horizon, as though in search of something. But does not the horizon retreat in proportion to the distance you travel? Better to travel hopefully than to arrive. Why does that come to mind? Where have I heard it before? I can see them all now, as though I am on a procession, a parade, like those on Independence Day, when the children played in the fields and bobbed for apples, while we drank beer and brandy and talked of the wonders of the age. Then to return to our frame houses where, by the light of the oil lamp, Emily would lay our children down to rest before coming to me, disrobing and joining me in the conjugal bed. I miss the smell of her hair, the touch of her skin. Perhaps when I have shed this madness and I once more can take my place in the world, I will feel, smell, and taste her once again. But there is another. She comes toward me now. Golden hair flowing like the corn in summer over her shoulders. Long, lean limbs that stretch to infinity and beyond. Eyes wide open and innocent, trusting of me, and asking only that I trust her in return. Of course I do, my love. You and Emily are equal in my heart. You always will be. You showed me that there could be a path to goodness in this bedlam of the soul. She holds out her hand. There is a reason why I have returned to this place of other dreams, other times. I have purpose. Tell me, Laurie, tell me. She holds out her hand. I want to take it, but I am constrained by those who would wish to be my protectors.
It's okay, Doc. You can do it. You can do anything here.
She is right. I am the eye who controls my own dreams. I disentangle my arms from those who support me and step out of myself to walk toward her. I reach out and take her hand, pulling her to me. We embrace, and once more I feel the warmth of another being close to me.
You have to listen to me, Doc. I can't be here long, but I have something to tell you.
No, you must stay. You cannot leave me again, not after so long. She steps back, smiles. Those eyes light with joy, pull me into her very being.
I wish I could stay or take you with me. I can't. Got to tell you this. You must know. You have been chosen. You have followed the others for too long. They lead you in circles that take you nowhere. If you are ever to escape this place, then you must assert your right to lead. The chance will come to you soon. You must take it. Seize the day, and you will be free once more. Stay silent, and you will be trapped forever.
I consider her words. But while I do, she begins to slip away from me. I want to call out to her. But I know she must go, and there is nothing I can do to prevent her taking her leave. Sadly, I watch her recede into the distance, just as I feel myself drawn back to the arms of those angels who support me, stop me falling to the ground once more. Sweet, sweet Laurie, so wise, so true. I must wait, bide my time, take my chance.
Don't stop now, Ryan. We're so close that I can manage a little longer.
The one-eyed man had dropped back to take his turn at assisting Doc with Christy. He smiled gratefully. He was about ready to drop just carrying himself. If Christy and Jack could take the burden just a little longer, he was in no condition to complain. Turning back, he could see what had once been indistinct shapes had now resolved themselves into identifiable blocks of huts and shacks, log cabins and metal-sheeted shelters from the weather. But it was too quiet. The hairs at the base of his neck prickled. He brought a blaster to hand for the first time since leaving the cave.
Something's not right. Triple red, people. There should be more signs of life when weather's this stable. Where the hell are all the people?
Carnage. That was the only way to describe what they had stumbled into. The result of a bitter battle. The buildings were empty. The windows in most had been shattered, allowing the elements to rend what had been within. Snow and ice covered clothing, tables, bed, and chairs that had been ripped, smashed, and scattered by the winds, and by some other agency. Doors hung open, some almost ripped from their hinges, others broken as though rammed. Wood had been splintered by the violence of battle, and those walls that were of corrugated metal, or reinforced by sheeting, showed signs of being bent out of shape. The few that were of cinder block remained intact, apart from shattered windows, their lack of damage delineating the limits of the violence. The snow had fallen and settled on the paths between the huts, a light covering that obscured some of what lay beneath. But there were patches of ice, clear enough, to show the blood and the churned mud beneath the glassy surface. And there were the remains. Nothing more than carrion now. Shreds of clothing identifying them as people, but little else that could act as an indicator. They were detached limbs, torsos, and crushed bone that may once have been skull. Whatever had whipped through the settlement like a hurricane of violence had made harsh work of the people living there. Stripped of most of the flesh, no skin remaining, with only a few red lumps of flesh and gristle hanging on what had once been rib cages and mauled out of shape. These were the few remnants of what had once been a community.
Dark night. What could have done this?
J.B. bent to examine something that looked as though it may have been a pelvis. Nearby, a hank of hair with some scalp still attached lay discarded in the mud. That was odd. Mud. The armorer rose to his feet and walked along the path, noting the churned-up patches under ice. There was little in the way of soil in these parts, little more than rock and ice. Any soil that did manage to exist lay on the upland rock formations to the west. Around back one of the cinderblock huts, he found an answer. Log troughs that had held earth 2 feet deep had been torn apart, the splintered wood littering the immediate area, the remains of some vegetable matter coaxed from the unyielding earth crushed underfoot. Tarpaulins, ripped into shreds, were scattered farther afield.
What? Oh.
Jibby whirled, bringing up his mini-Uzi, trigger finger flexing minutely as his nerves tightened.
Hello! There's nobody here but us chickens, John. Relax.
Mildred stepped around the back of the cinderblock building to join him, surveying the decimated troughs.
Crops? Out here?
Jibby scratched his forehead, pushing back his fedora.
A strange one. Maybe they couldn't find as much wildlife as they needed to trap. Must have had some kind of trading route set up, though. No way they went and got this much soil for themselves. Not as far as it is to the nearest supply. Must have bartered it for something.
So other communities hereabouts.
Which means we can't be all that far from them. Maybe press on a little.
Not stay here, rest up?
Depends if we want to stick around to see if whoever or whatever did this turns up again.
Not likely. Everyone here bought the farm at least a week back, by the look of what's left. And most of the damage of that has come from critters making the most of an easy meal.
Okay. Figure Doc needs to rest up, and Ryan looks like he could do with some, too. Hasn't had the chance while the rest of us have been grabbing some sleep. Let's get back and clue them in. And one more thing.
What's that?
Don't sneak up behind me like that again. I'm getting more and more jumpy as I get older.
I'll remember that.
The others were waiting for them a quarter mile off, having found some scant cover among rock formations that had been chipped away by the settlement dwellers for their own use. Where rock had been taken to build walls and reinforce hut defenses, a hollow had been made in which Christy and Jack had been able to secure Doc. Ryan waited with them, feeling relieved that they had been able to help Doc walk and not have to rig up some kind of carrier after all. This cover was scant enough without the extra space a stretcher would demand. That, at least, was one small piece of luck. Maybe there would be others.